Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I thought it was fascinating that you're, I think, the first Arab American comedian to perform for the troops who are stationed in the Middle East. So you're going over there and being like, hey, guys.
You know? I was a refugee still. I didn't even have my U.S. citizenship. I could have just disappeared in the middle of the night. Nobody would have cared. It's just like, I didn't have anything, any documentation. I like snuck into Kuwait to get in to go to Iraq to do it. And it was the first time that I went back because I felt like I had to reconcile a lot in my heart about like how fast we left. And I just thought how incredible it would be to go perform there. And it was not necessarily it was just like, oh, I want to go just perform for the troops. It was more so like if I could perform in front of them and be myself and be really my authentic self, then I could perform anywhere. And then I have no reservations about doing shows or being me. You know, imagine a scenario where you're afraid to be yourself. That's how depressing is that? Or where a career coming up is like, oh, you're Palestinian, Muslim, oh, Arab, oh. Why don't you just go by Tony and just be Italian? Like, what are you talking about? I mean, it really wore on me for some years because people were trying to get me to change. Several people that would come out of nowhere and or even audience members or, you know, would just like, you're so funny. Maybe if you just do this, you'll bust out. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, you want me to sell my soul? Great. All right. Pass. You want me to erase my grandmother? Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Next. You know, like,
yeah, thanks for the advice. So it's great to reconnect. I got to meet you and your beautiful family in the magical town of Yellow Spring, Ohio this summer as part of freaking Camp Chappelle. It was amazing. I've got a t-shirt. I've got memories. It really is like a summer camp.
I ended up going pretty crazy there. I bought a scooter and then three other motorcycles. And so somebody had an accident on my moped, like they on my motorcycle, and they hurt themselves pretty badly, like they cracked their shoulder and stuff.
Oh, wait. So that happened before I got on Michelle's moped and was like running around?
Yeah, so everybody was looking at you on there like, not Andrew.
Oh, that's why everyone was scared shitless, because I was like, guys, I'm an adult male. Like, this isn't like, you know, freaking Harley or something. Like, it's going to be all
right.
That's
what you would think. That's what you would think. Next thing you know, parking a scooter can fracture two of your shoulders. I still, to this day, don't know how he did it. But, you know, I'm glad he's okay. Matthew, I'm sorry. I love you. I hope you're well.
Yeah, shout out to you, Matthew. Hope your shoulders are all right. I'm so glad that at least some people were documenting parts of the camp experience. Because, I know that someone was working on a project for it, and I can see exactly how you got addicted to buying two-wheeled vehicles there, because it's summer, it's beautiful, you're just roaming around, and so I see why you didn't stop at the moped. I defend you, Mo. I defend you and your three motorcycles on top of it.
I appreciate it. I needed that. You know, I was going really smart, because I was like, yeah, I haven't ridden motorcycles in at least 12 years. So let's get like a 120cc little scoot situation, put a boombox that's almost bigger than the entire scooter itself on the back of it, enjoy these, you know, cinematic.
Beautiful. Gorgeous. You go there, like, you know, you just look out, it's like Americana cornfields, like sunshine. It was gorgeous.
I would pretend like I'm on American Pickers. I would constantly, like, stop and she's like, oh, what is this item? This is antique from the 40s. It was very nice. Like, stop at a rusted filled farm or something. Like, and I would attempt to buy some of their junk that's in the yard. That's like one of my favorite pastimes when I was just trying to decompress. It was so much fun. It was so much fun.
So how did your wife feel about the purchases?
This is a common question. More common than I ever thought it would be. Yeah, it's just like, I didn't really tell her. I just did it. I was very smart about it, though. I was like a traditional Arab trader. I was like, I don't know. You know, I was really like checking out the market. What are the pricing?
Honey, I bought the death machine smart. I was a savvy death machine buyer.
And then she divorced me. You know, that's how this all works out, you know?
It's a very clear progression, you know, that's why they have that divorce lawyer office attached to the motorcycle dealer now.
I bet there's a few of them.
Dude, this is a billion-dollar business idea. That's why I'm the entrepreneur. I've got a vision. You could attach all sorts of midlife crises services to the motorcycle dealership. It's like, what? You're here buying a bike?
Would you like these brand new overpriced sunglasses that make you look 30 years younger? That's how I justify my purchases. And like sunglasses, I have a, you know, you can't just buy regular sunglasses or else you just destroy them, throw them out. You won't respect them. You have to buy something of value that you have to care for them, especially if they have like resale value as well. Like, oh no, I can't lose these. Where are these? It makes you way more conscious of them.
Well, I think to me, there's like a threshold where something becomes real, and its reality often is commensurate to whatever you paid for it. You know, it's like if you buy like $5 sunglasses, they're not real. You can like lose them, sit on them, like throw them out. No one cares. But that as soon as you break through a certain investment threshold, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, this is an actual item of mine that I associate with myself. and it says something about me and I take pride in, or whatever it is. What is that threshold for me? When does something become real?
When does it become real? Like if it doesn't exist otherwise, like, this is garbage.
So I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know if you, like, I'm campaigning for the special Senate candidates. And I was getting some food for my family. It was one of those curbside pickup things. And so I stopped to park the car. There's an automated reader. And I was like, I don't know how long it's going to take me to pick up this food. So I stick the credit card in the reader and I'm just jamming in like add time. Because like, I was like, I don't want to calculate like the 25 cent per 8 minute threshold. I don't want to like cut it that close. Cause like, who knows how long that like some of these places take. So like that parking experience was like below my reality threshold. I was just like let's just make it so that I'm not gonna have to deal with this for a minute. It's one reason I became so passionate about universal basic income. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but just like we're now such a society of folks who are making that time money trade off all of the time, and I still do it, obviously. Though now the threshold has to be higher for me to say like, okay, it's going to be worth my cycles to try and save that quarter or whatever it is. This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product, and if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. When I was a kid, growing up, the child of immigrants in this country, like a quarter was precious, and I would go to the arcade and then play it and then just try and win for as long as possible. It's like that you had to like stretch the value of that quarter to a point where, you know, like you could entertain yourself all day on it, ideally.
That Street Fighter game at the corner store before high school or after high school was like the one, you know, that's the game. If you can just make that quarter, keep that was it.
That was like our test of value as like a teenager. It's like if you can win. And then it became not only can you win, but can you win with an obscure character? It's like it's not enough to be good at Ryu or Guile and defend your quarter. But then eventually when you're like, I'm just going to screw around, I'm just going to choose Blanca.
Never choose Blanca. Oh my God, never knew how to play with that guy.
And then there'd be like this ooh from like the people being like he's choosing Blanca. It's like a real expression of of like confidence or cockiness. The ultimate cockiness was Dhalsim, which is now that I reflect on it, a somewhat racist portrayal of like a Hindu warrior whose limbs stretched.
I love how you just like sat there for a second. Now that I think about it, just like maybe it was a racist portrayal of just seeing this kid. Like I saw the kid in you. Like. Now that I think about it, maybe I shouldn't have played with that character at all.
Well, he was also awful as a character. You know, like, he was, like, the closest thing to a sure loss was if you played with that guy. It could be that Mo and I are somewhat dating ourselves. It seems like you and I came of age around the same time. But I feel like even the kids know Street Fighter. I hope it's eternal. I hope it's one of those things.
I saw my nephews playing Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat just over Thanksgiving.
Nice! Yes!
But it was like, wow, oh, this is the Mortal Kombat y'all are growing up with. That's pretty cool.
Is it much better than ours?
It's so much better. The graphics are insane. Arguable. No, it depends. I actually like the classic. I mean, just seeing what they're dealing with. I mean, seeing the graphics, I kind of miss the dodgy graphics and the, you know, and seeing the Pit of Death. You know, like, it's a little bit different. A little bit more, really gruesome, actually.
I am definitely old enough now where I look back on certain things as, like, the standard of the golden years. You know what I mean? Like, the, like, 90s video games, 80s and 90s music. Like, it comes on, I'm like, oh, they don't make this like they used to.
You're reminding me of a joke, an amazing comedian, Jack Mayberry. He's like, you ever ride around with somebody old that always tell you where things didn't used to be, you know? You just be sitting there going, see that there? That wasn't there. All the way from there, all the way to over there. That wasn't there either. Hey, look at that. That wasn't there. That wasn't there from all the way from there to all the way to over there. It wasn't there. Hell, it was just dark. There was nothing out here. You know, it was just so fun. That's what you reminded me of right now.
That's actually a reasonable summation of what's gone wrong with the country, which is that like it really is, hey, we need to change things versus, no, let's stay the same, like have the same rules forever. And then we don't really have the capacity to actually change some of these institutions.
Explain that for
a lot of people are upset over the fact that the Electoral College and the popular vote aren't lining up terribly well. So you have folks who want to get rid of the Electoral College. But in order to get rid of the Electoral College, you would need a supermajority of states to get on board with that. And, like, there's zero chance that Kansas and Nebraska are going to be like, you're right. Like, we shouldn't have this much say. So it's one of those things where you look at and be like, look, this is not changing in the way that some people are arguing in any realistic fashion as long as you have that standard. There are a lot of things that right now we're having trouble shifting because there's really no consensus or no governing majority. And it's something that makes me very sad. It's why I'm in Georgia, honestly, is that I hoped that we would have a government that could actually address some of the big problems coming into 2021, because we've got major problems. And instead, it looks like we're going to struggle with a degree of gridlock and dysfunction for the foreseeable. And so you have this framework that's set up that says what you can do. And you can't change it unless you had, let's call it a supermajority. Let's call it 60 senators or whatever it is in the current rules. And so the frustration is setting in on both sides. We're having increasingly incoherent conversations about it. And it makes me very sad.
It makes me very sad, too. Like I told you in the beginning of this conversation. I mean, you were the first campaign that I ever vote. I mean, like, not only did I want to vote for you, but I contributed to.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
I'm telling you, man, look, as an Arab American, as a Palestinian background specifically, and also like has seen so much bullshit throughout my lifetime, and seen what my family has gone through, my parents have gone through, and seeing, you know, global politics, Middle Eastern politics, European politics, just traveling the world, and you were so logical about everything. Everything that you said, I was like, yeah, we should move inland. Yes, we all, why are we still on the coast waiting to drown? I don't know why we're doing this. We should definitely move inland. Everybody should, you know, get paid for the data that they keep sucking from us, these corporations keep sucking from. Yes, that makes perfect sense. Of course they don't want you to win. You know, like, that's how I feel. Oh, you want to help people, actually? You actually want to cancel poverty?
Cancel poverty, yes.
I knew that's what the shirt said because I'm a fan. Like, I'm a real fan.
Oh, thank
and all
you.
My friends I grew up with are all fans. Like, I grew up in a neighborhood in A-Leaf, which I revere, you know, and that's the place that raised me, man. It's like, I love that place so much. It's such a diverse community there. I mean, my friends that I grew up with, Sargon is half white, half Iraqi. Vinny is Italian background, who's a flight director at NASA, like, absolutely killing it. Sargon's
wow.
Killing it. Guillermo, who's, you know, he's Argentinian, excuse me. And having John, who's also Argentinian, and Nick, who's half Iranian, half white, and Neil, who comes from Indian background, and Akash, who comes from Indian background. These are my brothers that I grew up with, and we all talk about you.
Oh, wow. Well, thank them for me. Look at that. I got to meet these guys.
In our mindsets, like, man, you're the guy. You're like, you make the most sense. Everything you say is so logical. Everything is just fixes and resolves these issues. Like, and we all know, it's like, they're not going to let them win. There's like no way. It's just too easy. And I'm sorry to say, like, that's how I think.
There are millions of Americans who thought the exact same way. And it turns out they were onto something.
Yeah. And then the pandemic happens. We're like, let's just send everybody money. It's like, oh, word? Is that what we're going to do? We're so broke, guys. We're 20 trillion minus. But whenever we need it, because I think the stock market is not real. Like, I still to this day haven't had anybody like truly explain it to me where I walk away and I feel like, oh, that makes sense. You know, this all really, like, no matter what. And I know guys in investment banking and like in high up positions in New York and in these major banks and whatnot. And I always walk away like, he just really believes this bullshit. It's just like,
you have a brilliant routine on this that I saw in Ohio. And I still have your T-shirt that I wear very proudly, where it has like the Ponzi, like the E Pluribus Unum as Ponzi. And your riff on it was genius. You know, like, I was watching it happen and thought, I haven't seen anything like this before. And it's awesome. You know, I imagine it may end up being part of your next special or your next piece of work.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, it will.
This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech, who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit, generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side, where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's ExpressVPN expressvpn.com/yang, and you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang. So are you, I'm just going to guess, are you in Texas right now?
Yeah, no, I am. I'm from Houston. So I was, we haven't gone public with this stuff, but I'm writing a TV show currently. I'll just be really vague. I'm writing a TV show right now. I was in a full-blown writing room and it was just exhausted. So Dave invited me to Ohio to do these shows and was like, hey man, I was going from my bedroom to my office, and the absolute mindfuck of writing a show is, on top of a pandemic, civil unrest, of course, with Big Floyd and then Brianna, and then everything that was going on globally, and then aliens are real. Nobody wants to talk about that. Just like brushed over like there's nothing. Yeah, aliens are real. Let's go back to the pandemic.
I was totally going to share the reality of aliens as your president.
I constantly try to get Vinny to admit it. I'm like, hey, man, you're a flight director now, so you must know some shit. Come on. Tell us. And he's like, I don't know anything. It was like, but things like that. So Dave invited me to go out there, and then after the shows were finished, I came back to Houston and or Texas, and I just love it here, man. This is always be my home. I think that a lot of celebrities that end up making it and doing well for themselves, some reason just gravitate to want to be in New York all the time or LA all the time, and I think there's nothing better. I'm more of like the Dave model. He is that model for like keeping your sanity, honestly, like just going, doing your job, going on tour, getting the deals, and then going to a place where, excuse me, it keeps you grounded and it keeps you in touch with that reality, the people that really care about you and been there for you, and you get to share it with them. That's really more valuable than anything else to me. So I've been very conscious of that whenever I get the opportunity to do things on a really large scale like I'm doing now, is just like the more important it is for me to highlight A-Leaf and to show how special this neighborhood. I mean, there are 80 different languages spoken in this language. I mean, in this neighborhood, it's pretty incredible. It's one of the most diverse places I've ever been on earth. No joke. Like, I'm not just saying that. It's just a great spot. So it's a great place, and a great place to raise your kids and be around. And there's something in the water there. Like, Lizzo came out of there, and Beyonce came out of there, and Rashard Lewis, and all these, like, I think Megan Thee Stallion, like, all these great artists, Toby Nwigwe, who's really popping off right now.
Yeah, Toby was there in Ohio.
He's such a family guy. He brought his two kids and his, Linnell has two kids, and then he brought his friends and their kids. They had, like, they had seven children in this van.
No, I remember. It was freaking Kid Fest. I hadn't had an experience like Ohio in years, where I was just like a human being walking around. We'd all been tested, so there was like you didn't have to mask up and socially distance, you could just have a normal conversation. I loved it. I mean, I was there for Dave's birthday, and it felt like I was getting the gift, honestly. I mean, that's the beauty of Dave, is that, it's like, we all get more than we give, if he says that. It's like, hey, come on out. It's like a gift to us. But just standing there like a human being, having like Toby and like coming with his kids and like holding them and playing with them and just like hanging out at Donnell's and eating his food, and being like a normal human was beautiful. It's like a beautiful experience that I hadn't had in, certainly months, probably years.
It's so weird. You step out of it and the world's like, ah! You step back in, it's quiet. You're like, oh. How he did it was really impressive. I mean, he set the standard. It's kind of sad that a stand-up comedian can show you how it's done, and the entire government's like, we don't know. Like, I don't, just stay home. I don't know. Like, it's always like, maybe 2 weeks. 2 hours, okay, 7 months. Like, what?
The deficiencies around treating the pandemic, we had a window of time where I think you could have had a consistent message and done some good. But, I think that people at this point, 7-8 months in, like, it's a lot harder to get everyone on board with something. And we just didn't have the people in place. And when I say people, I mean like the human beings, the staffers who would literally meet with you when you got off the plane, or would trace any contacts you had if you did wind up interacting with someone.
We went and did shows in Dubai at the end of October, Dubai Comedy Festival, 50% capacity. They're like at least getting it back up again. Amazing show at the Dubai Opera. It was a breath of fresh air to just go and actually feel like things are normal. And so when we had to have a test before you get into Dubai, within a certain period of time, you have to have a negative COVID test. You hand them the COVID test. You go in, you get, you know, temperature checked, and they go through, they ask you some questions about, you know, pandemic questions, and you go through them. No, no, no. Okay, good. Give me your test. Bam, you're over. You go to the hotel. They ask you the thing again. They check your temperature. Everything is very diligent. They created jobs for things that you didn't think you needed, like, you know, making sure they clean up after you immediately at any table you're at, or, you know, if you're at the lounge, they created a job for somebody to just hand you food. Like, that's what their job is now. They're always masked up. They're the only person handling everything. Everything that you can think of that would be required, and things you never thought you'd think of, they did it. At malls, there's partitions everywhere, plastic partitions. I mean, it's so detail oriented, everything, right? Coming back to the States, we all got COVID tested. We're like, hey, we need to give you your COVID test. They're like, oh no, you're fine. I was like, what do you mean? We're fine. They're like, you don't need one coming back to America. I'm like, what do you mean you don't need one coming back to America? They're like, where are you flying to? I was like, we're flying into Chicago. And they go, oh, only Boston requires you to have a COVID. I'm like, what? Excuse me? Like, okay, well, at least we did it. You know, at least we just were responsible enough just to do it, you know, and take the time out and pay for such a test. So anyway, we got it done. We land. I have global entry, so you don't even have to see anybody. You just scan your passport. It prints out your receipt, and you leave. Well, I'm masked up. I'm like, my picture is just like this. You can't, I'm wearing glasses. You can't even see it's me. Nobody even checked, and nobody even checked to see if, much less my temperature. Nobody checked my temperature. Nobody, like, properly identified me. It could have been my sister entering on my passport.
There's a reason why other countries won't take Americans going that direction, but this direction, it's like, yeah, whatever. Like, at this point, it's like, you can't be bringing it in and be making it worse at this point. Like, really, like, the rest of the world is trying to contain us.
It's mind-blowing. We went into the lounge in Chicago, no temperature checks, the buffets, touch everything you want, so there's not anybody designated to hand you shit. The tables didn't look like, I mean, like, they were okay. They didn't look like somebody, they had a sheen to it, like somebody just cleaned it. We got up, and then they just grabbed the stuff and throw it out. They're not being sprayed down. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? It was night and day. In the truest sense, it was night and day. You felt so safe being in Dubai. You felt like they really, truly had it under control. They had mask laws in place where if you weren't wearing a mask...
Did you say mask laws?
Yeah, they did. They had mask laws in place. Like, hey, if you don't wear a mask after, like, a warning, you're going to get ticketed. If you don't, you know, if you get COVID...
Dude, in America, you know this because you're from Texas. If you did that, like, a gunfight would ensue shortly thereafter.
You know what I mean? But would they be wearing masks during that gunfight? That's all that matters. I saw a lot of people already getting vaccinated in the Emirates as well, which really blew me away. Some friends of mine that are online, like, I saw Habib, the great MMA fighter, getting vaccinated. I'm like, yo, they're killing it over there already. And by the way, I'm not a big vaccine guy. Like, I'm always suspicious. All I needed to do was, like, read one article in the 90s about people that were getting vaccines in Africa that were injected with HIV virus. I'm like, okay, I'm never going to get a vaccine ever again. Like, I'm never going to do it.
So you go there, and the experience you have is a little bit like what I think my parents are experiencing. So my mom was here. We said, you should probably leave the country because it's probably safer someplace else because, you know, she's in her 70s. And so she's in Taiwan and things are perfectly normal there. They had something like 10 cases like in the beginning, and then that was a wrap. And if you go there, because it's an island, you know, they can manage it. They did manage it. And so there's like a very, very high degree of cohesion and public trust. And now we're a little bit envious. We're like, well, we sent her away for her safety, and now she's just, you know, like hanging out, having
like dinner with friends.
the rest of it, we're like, what the heck is going on here? Maybe we should have gone there for our safety.
I'm headed to Taiwan, Mama. Here I come. I just show up. Who the hell's this burly Arab guy?
My mom's actually very sweet. We used to send her my friends, and she was always fantastic about any of them. It was one of those situations where if you're going to Taiwan, I'd be like, hey, like, you know, my mom will take care of you, and then I'm like, hey, mom, I have a friend coming, and then my mom would show up and be very sweet, and they would fall in love with her and whatnot. So
I grew up in a salad bowl of many ethnic backgrounds, like, and I can relate to it as somebody who has tons of family back home. That's the thing. Like, and if I always tell them, hey man, if you're going there, I got you. Just let me know. And they always take care of them. You know, it's a trust, you know, it's like this trust between us that it's like, oh, when you have a visitor, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to us within our culture and even our religion and Islam. Like, it's a big, big deal. Like, if any Muslim, for instance, like, just shows up and be like, take care of me from out of town, you're obligated to do it for 3 days. Like, you can just do that.
That's an awesome rule.
So it's like, it's just culturally ingrained in us. It's not something that we have to, like, try to do. We actually love it, and then we fight over how much you can take care of this guy. Like, we will just, you know what I mean? Like, we'll feed you to death. We will take care of you. We'll show you the sights. It's just part of who we are.
I do want to revisit what you said about vaccines for a sec. I think that we're going to need to have this COVID vaccine widely distributed and administered. Because if you wind up with like a hodgepodge, it's never ending, really. Like, there has to be a point. And sure, there are going to be a lot of people that have reservations and skepticism and don't want to be the first person and the rest of it. Totally.
Look, I'll totally do it. Reasonable. I just need to see a few people, how they work out. You know what I mean?
I think there are going to be a lot of people with that attitude. So someone asked me whether I'd be one of the first to get it. And I said yes, because I know that if I get it, other people will trust it more. I'd feel happy to do that. You know, like I think that the COVID vaccine, I don't see the risk outweighing the reward in virtually any scenario. You know what I mean? I think that if you get this vaccine, you'll probably feel shitty for a few days, and then that'll be that.
Look, Andrew, you take it specifically because to me, you're the guy I trust the most on that side of the world. I really do, man. I just like have a lot of trust in you, and like just everything you say, like I said before, and I'd be happy for you to be my lab rat.
I, Andrew Yang, willing lab rat, inject this shoulder, not the throwing shoulder. I mean, it means a lot to hear you say that, Mo. I mean, that's one reason why I would do it.
I'm telling you, I would never. I would never contribute to any, like, I always saw through the bullshit. I never, you know, I don't like to contribute to any political thing. I just, like, even if I sniff a little something, I'm like, no, you know, this is bullshit. I contribute to you. So I would completely trust if you took the vaccine, and I would be like, yo, is it you good? I would call you a couple days later. Hey, how you feeling, bro? You feeling all right? You feeling all right, buddy? How's the temperature? Is it working out? Can you still walk? Any pains?
And then there'd be like a robot voice of me being like, yes, I feel great.
I feel wonderful. Thank you. Andrew? Oh, no.
I think there are some of these things where you could use more data. Like if you get more data, that would be very beneficial. But if the data is sound and folks I trust, you know, who are scientists are on board, then, you know, like I'm on board. And the tough truth of it is that mistrust in the United States is sky high at this point. There was one point when I was trying to figure out, I was like, who are the most trusted figures in American life? Like, who, if they were like, I'll do this thing, then everyone's like, okay, that's cool. And so I tried to make this list. I certainly think Dave's on that list. I'm going to throw out Tom Hanks and Oprah for fun.
I don't trust Oprah. I trust Tom. I trust Hanks.
You know, you can't get them all.
I can't. No, Tom's on my list.
Michelle Obama, I think, would be on a lot of people's list.
All right.
No comment from Mo on that one. Moving on.
Michelle over Obama. I know it's fucked up to say, but I would take Michelle over. I trust Michelle more than I do Obama.
Dude, we should do this as like a number one draft pick, like an NBA fantasy draft or like the trust draft. It's like my most trusted human being in American life, like number one draft pick, Dave Chappelle. And everyone's like, yay.
I trust Dave big time because he's really skeptical of everything just like I am. So I really trust him on that. So if he's doing something, I'd be like, yo, I think he's vetted this for real. And then I trust Jon Stewart. You're on my list.
Wow.
Put you three on the list. No particular order. Michelle is interesting. I didn't think about Michelle Obama. I'd put Michelle Obama on the list too. Who's my fifth? I wouldn't put Tom Hanks on my fifth. I mean, I love Tom Hanks. It's funny. Like, I don't usually trust Toms, but Hanks is the only Tom I would trust. I don't know who the fifth would be.
I'm going to throw some folks out there that would be more institutional, more kind of the folks that, like, a newspaper would be like, oh, we should trust this person. Actually, even if the government were to come together, this is a really interesting exercise. Mo, let's think about this. All right. So, you're the United States of America. And you're like, okay, we've got this COVID vaccine, and we have to have people like and trust it. You know? So we need to stick some folks and then have them be like, it's cool. So then if you are the United States government and you're trying to figure out who you can ask whether they'll get on board with this, someone just popped into my mind, LeBron James. That would be like a very big deal.
I would get Hank Williams on there. Hank Williams Jr. to make sure that I get everybody in the middle. I mean,
so here were the establishment figures that I originally thought of that I'm just going to throw out there because I thought of them, whatever. Bill Gates, Warren Buffett.
No. Immediately, they're too rich. I'm a tough one to crack, bro. I'm like, not. I don't just go with nah.
If you were to say to the population, being like, hey, we want you to get vaccinated, one thing that stands to reason is you'd want people who are at least tending toward the at-risk category to get vaccinated because they're the highest danger of, having serious complications. And so you would probably ask all the senators, hey, like, you up for this? And then the senators would look up and be like, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. And I dare say that that would probably fall somewhat along party lines, unfortunately. I'm just guessing.
If I saw all the senators get the vaccine and I saw everybody in government, like live feed, C-SPAN, I gotta have somebody I trust on the inside there sitting there like you're sitting there like I confirm that this is in fact the vaccine.
They don't have like a latex like sleeve where they're getting like, you know, like I like touch the flesh and I'm like it's going into flesh.
It's not a fake needle that's just like disappearing when you put it in there. No. I want to see all this. That's how I am, though, man. I need this. And I feel like a lot of Americans feel this way, too.
Oh, a lot of Americans will, totally.
How sad is that? That this is we're the United States of America. The number one, supposedly, on Earth in everything. That's what everybody feels like, even though we're like,
we're number 28. we're number 28 if you have like if you combine our social measurements and well-being around things like infant mortality, clean water, public education.
Oh, public education is the most disgusting thing. I remember just like leaving when we fled the war in Kuwait in 90 and ended up in Houston, and I was going to a private school there and ended up in public school here, and fourth grade was still like 2 + 2 = 4 apples. Yay. I'm looking around. You know, I was learning already multiple languages in elementary. And basically almost doing pre-algebra in fourth grade. to come to the States. I was like, what is this? Oh, I don't even have to study. This is ever. Like, I never brought a book home. I never, ever. My mom's like, how did you graduate? I was like, Ma, it's a joke. The whole thing is a giant joke. You just have to, like, memorize certain pages and then regurgitate them on test day and you're fine. And I failed ninth grade. Like, I skipped everything and caught up in no time. I had a ball. I lived, like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off all of ninth grade. I just, my father passed away and I just quit on everything. I was going to baseball games. You know, I was doing everything. I was going to places I shouldn't be going. I was sneaking into casinos in Louisiana. I was just having a ball. And then I later discovered that will take me nowhere really fast. So then I readjusted. One of my teachers changed my life and got me to do stand-up in class because that's what I always wanted to do. And I've been doing stand-up ever since I was 14 since then. But anyway, the point is the education system is just a joke.
Thank goodness for that teacher. I mean, that story where she said, look, I'll let you pass if you stand up and do stand-up for the class. How many teachers would have done that? So let's thank that teacher.
Miss Reed, I've tried to reach out to her so many times. I can't find her. I'm trying to... She hasn't opened her Facebook since 2015 or something.
She's not on Twitter. Come on, Miss Reed. I mean, she changed your life. She probably changed other people's lives, too. I mean, any teacher who'd let a kid actually take class time to practice their comedy and then give them a passing grade.
Oh, and then she like literally took me to after I did several sets in her class over a few weeks. She took me over to theater arts department, and she was like, "This kid's been coming in doing original content and doing all these different accents and stuff. I think he belongs here." And then next thing you know, I was in theater and you know, getting lead roles in musical plays, musical theater, and just getting lead roles all the way around, making UIL. I ended up getting a partial scholarship to go to the NYU School of Film and Television. I didn't take it. I had to stay home and take care of the family, help contribute and work and do stand-up. And I was like, I'm going to be a comedian anyway, so I'm doing stand-up anyway. Why do I need to go do that? Which none of my family even knew I had that. I didn't even tell anybody because I was afraid that anybody would encourage me to go. And I knew that that wouldn't be good for my mom and my brother. It was like I had to stay behind.
Wow. That's like a freaking movie plot, being like, you know, they didn't know that he had the scholarship in his back pocket. I mean, you are a very, very dramatic example, Mo. But studies have shown that arts education and theater are some of the best things for kids' long-term success in life and academic performance even. And it's terrible that if a school budget gets tight, a lot of the time that's like the first stuff they cut because they're like, oh, this stuff's a luxury. But it turns out that those are difference makers for kids in a way that a lot of the other stuff is not. So your teacher was onto something, and thank goodness that she was there and that there was a theater program for you, because those theater programs, you know, I'm going to out someone. If you're a part of the Yang Gang, you know, Zach Grauman, my campaign manager, the tall, handsome, blonde dude who helped make everything happen. And he was like a music theater geek at a certain point. He was like one of those like kind of stars of the high school play kind of thing. That stuff really makes a big difference. Like, I think that you end up with like a very different sense of yourself and confidence and ability to get up and express ideas. Not that everyone can become a world famous comedian like you are, you know, I mean, because, you know, but like someone like Zach, who has done great things in his career, he started a nonprofit, he's done like all sorts of stuff. I genuinely think that drama, theater, and the arts at a young age are part of the secret sauce.
No, I agree. I couldn't. I'm telling you, it saved my life. It really did. Not only did it like shape me as who I am today, but it really, really gave me something to look forward to, and this excitement that it's harder to put it into words. I get really like emotional about it, and it feels like so long ago that she did that, and she really just changed my life. And the people that I've met in that department, and what did they end up doing? They all became pretty successful and doing well for themselves. it's just inspiring to do that. And you're right, it gives you great, you know, really valuable life skills as well, to be able to speak in front of anybody, social skills as well, camaraderie, and also to do something as a great, you know, a great play, for instance, to execute it on a high level and to do it during UIL or competition, and to see the reaction, and then you see like this, you know, 500-year-old Shakespearean play come to life this many years later and still be as potent than it was in its day. There's something really, really incredible about that, to tell you that you can create timeless pieces of art. And that was exciting as well. And also tapping into skills that I didn't even know I had, you know, which is like, you know, singing theatrically. I could do that. I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't know I could do that. That's really cool.
I was in my high school play, not the lead at all, but like there were like the cast parties and all of that other stuff. And then like, you know, cause you came together, you created something, and then you come together and you're kind of bonded. It's a beautiful, environment. And as an entrepreneur now, it's like that kind of thing happens, in business, in enterprise, in politics. It's like the folks who are on my team now, you know, like we all, went through something special, and so we're connected. I know you and the other comedians are like super connected because you freaking hang out on the road and like you get out there in front of folks. I mean, heck, you know, you went to Dubai, you probably went with a bunch of other folks.
I got Michelle to come with me, Michelle Wolf, not Obama, but Michelle Wolf. We went out there and had a great time. It was her first time there, and it was really funny, you know, because people have these like projections about going to the Middle East, or specifically just talk about the Emirates, and she was just being just respectful and caring, as somebody would when you're visiting their country, right? Not really judgmental, it's more so, I don't want to be disrespectful. And when we got there, when we're on the flight there, actually, she goes, hey, I bought a bunch of outfits that are, you know, it's not like Michelle doesn't dress modestly anyway, but she was like, I need to, you know, I got some nice, modest
outfits. I got some really conservative granny type shit.
If I was drinking water, I would have spat on her face because I was laughing so hard. I was just like, and she goes, what are you laughing at? I was like, just wait. And like the first restaurant we went to, there was like two women sitting there with, and they were just like, you know, Miami, you know, let's just put it that way. And she just dies laughing. I'm like, you feel better? You feel better now? And it's something that she would never wear, you know? So just people have these like projections about that area. Even some comedians, really big comedians, they're like, oh, I don't know about performing there. I mean, chop my head. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we do all the chopping. What are you talking about? Do you understand that we're the ones that have destroyed that entire region? I mean, like, can we just please acknowledge that? Can we take some responsibility for that? And they have these, like, projections on what it is and what it's like and what they've been fed about what the Middle East is. And it's just, it makes me really sad. It makes me laugh and sad. You know what I mean? Like something that makes you
laugh
so
and
sad.
Cry. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, come on, guys. Like, you stop eating this. It's not good for you. They're not feeding you soul food here.
I thought it was fascinating that you're, I think, the first Arab American comedian to perform for the troops who were stationed in the Middle East. So you're going over there and being like, hey, guys.
I was a refugee still. I didn't even have my U.S. citizenship. I could have just disappeared in the middle of the night. Nobody would have cared. It's just like, I didn't have anything, any documentation. I like snuck into Kuwait to get in to go to Iraq to do it. And it was the first time that I went back, because I felt like I had to reconcile a lot in my heart about like how fast we left. And I just thought how incredible it would be to go perform there. And it was not necessarily, it was just like, oh, I want to go just perform for the troops. It was more so like, if I could perform in front of them and be myself and be really my authentic self, then I could perform anywhere. And then I have no reservations about doing shows or being me. You know, imagine a scenario where you're afraid to be yourself. That's how depressing is that? Or where a career coming up is like, oh, you're Palestinian, Muslim, oh, Arab, oh. Why don't you just go by Tony and just be Italian? Like, what are you talking about? You want me to erase my lineage?
You know what that suggestion is, Mo? That's a pro wrestling suggestion. You show up and then Vince McMahon's like, and we're going to call you Vinny DeVici, whatever it is.
This is not what I'm doing here. Like, it's to me, stand-up comedy is the most authentic art form. And the more personal you are, the funnier you are, and the more you stick out. And it was just like, wow, I couldn't believe this was a regular. I mean, it really wore on me for some years because people were trying to get me to change. Several people that would come out of nowhere, and or even audience members, or, you know, would she's like, you're so funny. Maybe if you just do this, you'll bust out. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, you want me to sell my soul? Great. All right. Pass. You want me to erase my grandmother? Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Next. You know, like,
thanks for the advice, asshole who just had three beers. I mean, you immigrated from Kuwait when you were 9, right? Like, showed up here in the States, and you left pretty quickly. So going back must have been a real arc, because if you're 9, you remember stuff, you know, like
I remembered everything. I remember the street that we lived on. I was giving directions to the driver. I was telling him where to go, and I remembered everything. I have a really clear photographic memory for things, and I just remember scenes, and just like, I have this reel in my head of all the good times, the bad times, and the extreme times. And it was just something that it was the last time that I ever had like a semblance of family, like real family, where we were just like, my uncle's down the street, my cousins are over here, my friends are out there. Like, you can just walk outside and play for hours.
That's a beautiful vibe. We all dream about that. You like go outside and then go across the street, and then they're like, friends or family that you can just play with, and like parents don't care and just know you're going to be safe.
Yeah, it's none of that. Like, the biggest crime that I remember when I was there, somebody broke, and this was like front page news, was that somebody broke into somebody's house and they stole the jewelry from their freezer. And that was like literally front page news. Oh my God, you see this? You know, I would leave when I was, my mom was like, ever since you were a kid, things like, what the heck? Like, ever since you were a little kid, your ass was always itchy. You had to be out. You know, you would leave. I was 5 years old. I would leave.
Just walk out. I've got a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, and my 5-year-old just walked out the door. Like, there'd be like a super freak out. It'd be like, where is he? And then my wife, Evelyn, and I would be like, it's your fault.
Yeah, and I would be the kid. I would come back with a sandwich. What are you guys fighting about? Like, 8 hours later. Like, literally, that's what I was. My mom would say, you would leave from, like, noon, and you'd, like, or before noon, you would go out, you'd play soccer, you'd just be gone, and you would come back, like, after dinner. You're like, where have you been? You know, you really miss that, and you come to the States, and, you know, like, we're really sheltered over there. Your innocence is preserved. Is really preserved.
Well, one of the things that has blown my mind about American kids programming is there is so much shit warning you about strangers. It is incredible. It's like they really just try and cram that mistrust in kind of early. They're like, stranger danger, someone talks to you.
Also hypersexualized too, which is like, when I first came here, it was like, it was the end of fourth grade. We moved in this new apartment complex, and I just met this kid. Like, I don't know. My mom doesn't. Nobody knows, like, what's going, like, we don't know what the culture is like fully. Like, there's a huge gap missing, right? And so my friend's like, my dad's gone. We can go look at his Playboy. And I was thinking, like, in my head, I was like, oh, it must be like some toy magazine, you know?
Playboy, why not?
I was like, oh, cool, let's go check out the Playboy. And I literally screamed when he opened it, you know? I screamed.
They should definitely make a movie or TV show or a series about your life, Mo. And it sounds like that might be happening, not to put pressure on you about the secret project. So you have the comedy special on Netflix, Vagabond, if you haven't seen it. It's on Netflix. You all have Netflix. So check it out if you haven't seen it. You're working on the super secret show. Are there other things that you're working on that you can share that or ways that people can check you out?
Well, I'm on the, you know, aside from the Vagabond, of course, I'm very proud of on Netflix. Make sure you listen through the credits. Black Thought from The Roots and Stro Elliott from The Roots made that song. And also there's like some great pictures of me performing for U.S. troops. It's just a little bit to get to know me a little bit better even. So just watch that through. I know how Netflix is. I'm on the hit show Rami on Hulu.
Oh, yeah, Hulu. Freaking, how did I miss that? Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It's so much fun doing that show with the fellas. Such a fun show. And so we're doing that. We're gearing up for season three. There is a show about my life that's gearing up. You're right, Andrew. It's happening. I've been working really hard and waiting for this opportunity for the last 21 years, so it's really thrilling to do so. And another stand-up special is in the works as well. So anything you need from me ever, we need you as the next president of the United States, or at very least in that cabinet, you know, I truly believe in checks and balances if you're there. I truly believe in that.
Thanks, Mo. I'm going to make you believe in, you know, this vaccine and maybe some other things. If I get it, you can just call me and I'll let you know what's up. I'm so excited for you, Mo, that just, like, you have so much going on. You're so prolific, which, like, I knew some of but not all of. You're, like, on every quality streamer, too. Look at that. It's like, you know...
No, I'm spreading it around, baby. Spreading around.
Well, please say hello to your family and our mutual friends. I really appreciate the support. And this was fun. This was a pleasure. I knew it would be.
It was really, really a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me.